Hello everyone, Sylvain Chamberlain again. I want to discuss today something of critical importance to practicing the Buddhist teachings correctly. I want to be careful here because I don't want to alienate anyone. The purpose of Buddhism is to help anyone and everyone attain a state of liberation from the cycle of birth and death. That comes from the Four Noble Truths. Let me back up a moment and tell you why we need to have this discussion. The Buddha taught 2,500 or 3,000 years ago, depending on what scholarship you follow, long time ago. The people didn't know about quantum physics then. They didn't know about cars. They didn't know about mass food production. You get it, right? What's hard to understand, the only reason I bring that up, is you have to try to understand the mind of a 2,500-year-old person. They simply didn't have the information you and I have. Having said that, there are Every philosophy, religion, mythology, everything that mankind has created to understand this vast thing we're in, always includes some component of what happens after I die. This is one of the central concerns of the Buddhist teachings. And it takes a lot of reading, a lot of research, and those aha moments happen. You have to see through the prose and the rhetoric and the way that the Buddha had to communicate to the people of his day in order to get them to this understanding. Today, we have much more powerful concepts and words that we can speak to, like Einstein's E equals MC squared, and quantum physics, and not just science, but just as a society, we have far more developed concepts that we can use to describe what the Buddhist teaching was essentially about. This is important to understand because the concept of impermanence in all of the Buddha's writings is so fundamentally critical to the understanding of all of his teachings. If you know the Four Noble Truths, and it comes up because I'm constantly asked about this, what happens after we die? What is birth and rebirth? What is reincarnation? What is this thing, rebirth? It implies that we, in this human form, somehow, there's a little box of, use me as an example, or Bob. Okay, Bob thinks there's a box of Bob, and if he doesn't achieve completely enlightened status by the time he dies, liberated from the cycle of birth and death, then he's going to come back as something. Another version of Bob in some cases. In other cases, maybe just another version of animals or life in general. I'm going to say something that you might think is a little radical right now, and please don't turn away. Listen to what I'm going to say. If you call yourself a Buddhist, especially if you are practicing some form of Buddhism, please hear me out, because this comes from great scholarship, much greater minds than mine. who have really, really dug into ad nauseum with tremendous, wonderful arguments and made it absolutely clear what the Buddha's intent was when he spoke of impermanence and what rebirth really means. Nagarjuna is someone that I will refer all of you to. The concept of anatman, soullessness, the concept of impermanence, which anatman is a part of, so well argued with so many references to the actual writings of Buddha's words. If somewhere in your mind, in some form or another, you still think, I'm not even going to use the word belief because that's a tricky word, you still think somewhere in your mind that when you die, you'll go someplace. You go someplace. You are not practicing Buddhism. I know that may sound harsh, but hear me through. I wanted to start with that because I want you to really pay attention to me here. I've been studying this 27 years, and it's been difficult. As much as I love science, and believe me, I almost took up a career as a nuclear chemist, a research chemist, because I just love digging into knowledge for me. I could easily be one of those guys who gets stuck in the learning and realization worlds. Buddhism got me out of that, but I still have a deep appreciation for truly understanding the meaning of things. If you're not sure about impermanence and what it means, an example I often use to start this discussion is that today, see, this is another thing. Today, we know because we can observe it. And Buddhism is all about observable facts. There's no mysticism. Buddhism is a practice of deep observation in order to have deep, profound understanding, that with that profound understanding, we can retrain our minds to see our world differently such that it no longer influences us. I'm giving you a second to digest that. If you understand how the universe, the world, the life, your life, the life of everything around you truly works, how it's all interconnected, and how there are nothing static, but everything's always in movement, and therefore influences and creates this cause and effect, these causes lead to those effects. It's obvious. And what leads to those causes? Previous causes and the whole ball of wax. If you truly understand that at its profound depth, then it stops influencing you. And when you stop being influenced by everything around you, your emotions quell. Your understanding is pervasive. You're calm, conscious, and actually, you feel deeply felt love and compassion for those who aren't there yet. This is a state of enlightenment in this lifetime, not after you pass away, not after you've been reborn as a dog, a cat, a tree, and another Bob, right now. That is the Buddha's teachings, the Buddha's words. When Buddha first recognized that, the historical Buddha, he wrote the Avatamsaka Sutra, flower ornamental scripture. This is one translation. Okay? Sorry, my eyes are really bad. I just wanted to make sure you could see that. This entire book, and we're talking 1,600 pages or more. This is a translation now. This is Buddha saying, wow, this is what it's like to know that. And after he taught this, he came to the next realization. Wow, nobody understands what I'm talking about. We've all had that feeling. I'm sure if you're a parent, you know exactly what that feels like. So, for the next 40 years, Buddha taught in steps. Let me get you here. Now, once you're here, you get that? Well, I don't want you to forget that, but that's not it. Now that you know that, let's go here. It's kind of like teaching math. If you take a six-year-old and you start explaining, complicated calculus, hey, you may have an exceptional six-year-old, okay? I'll allow for that. But most of us as age six are going to have a real hard time getting that, fully understanding calculus or trigonometry or geometry. We have to start with 1 + 1 and times tables and repetition. Then once our minds grasp that, then we start building on it. This is how Buddha taught Buddhism. He had to. So the full teaching, the full impact of his teaching didn't really come to fruition until the last 8 years of his life, when it's widely accepted that he taught the Lotus Sutra and the Nirvana Sutra. The Lotus Sutra being a key piece that really just says, okay, here it is. And still to this day confounds a lot of scholarship, let alone just ordinary folks like you and me. Now, I say I'm ordinary, but I did take my vows as a Buddhist monk back in 1988. But I don't like to say that that makes me different from you. All that is a qualification that says, look, I'm serious about this. I've really been chasing the scholarship. This is all I do. This and paint. I'm an artist. I can't do anything else. It's just too far from my practice of Buddhism. Anyway, back to this impermanence thing. We know today that every 7 years, every single cell in our body has been regenerated. That think about that. Every single cell in your body, the cells that make my nose, the cell that makes my fingernails, my hair, my eye color, my bad knee, internal organs, on and on and on. All of it completely not existent 7 years ago. This physical self is a completely different physical self than what I called me 7 years ago. The only reason that I stay connected throughout that time is that I'm shifting memories in my brain from cells that are dying, to new cells that are being generated. So with my mind, with my brain, I should say, I'm keeping a continuum of Sylvain going. But the truth is, even the cells of my brain are all new. They've just been programmed internally to hold on to some stuff. Kind of explains why we forget certain things in our lives. Maybe that's a partial explanation. Anyway, if you understand that and you digest that and you go, yeah, I get that. We have bone marrow, and in our bone marrow we have stem cells that haven't decided what they're going to be yet until our DNA program says, I need you to go to the liver. Okay, I become a liver cell. That's how it works. We have science, we've observed it, we've tested it, we know this. This isn't mysticism. We know that we're constantly rebuilding, one cell at a time, our entire body. There are billions and billions of cells in our body. So it is not a stretch by any means to say that right now, as I'm speaking to you, cells are dying and cells are being recreated and replacing older cells. This is why we exfoliate and we get dandruff and our hair grows. that's the process of cells dying and new cells coming in to replace them. All right. Now, I'm going to take another step. If we understand that, it's not unreasonable to make the following statement. That life is a process. Life is a process. Life is not this. Life is a process. This is an instantiation, a manifestation from the life process. Death is not the opposite of life. Death is the opposite of birth. Birth and death happen as a manifestation, a duration of a manifestation within the process of life. Do you get it? Birth and death are like two sides of a coin, and that coin comes of the currency of the life process. It's like a drop of water falling into a great pond. That drop of water is like a lifetime. It's a unit, and it exists. And then when it penetrates the pond, it has an effect. And it may even stay integral to itself for a little bit, but not very long. And then it belongs to the pond. And its effect are the little ripples, which eventually just integrate into the pond. The pond is the life process, and the drop is a life, a birth and a death. If we understand that we're constantly replacing cells in this manifest physical form, it's not unreasonable to say that our lifetime from birth to death is a series of discrete little moments all lined up one after the next. Just like our brain keeps a hold of memories, throws away some, builds on others, makes assumptions for what's going to happen next. All those assumptions based on the memory that it already has stored. So there's already kind of a limiting kind of perception there, right? So every moment I'm actually a new man. Right now I'm talking to you as a different person as when I started this video. This is part and parcel, no pun intended, of what the Buddha was talking about. Nothing is permanent. Everything moves through a locus of points, and at some point reintegrates with the pond. Comes out of the pond, reintegrates with the pond. It's like evaporation, condensation, drop, pond. It's not a great analogy, but I think you understand. I'm going to let you chew on that a little bit because I'm going close to 20 minutes now. I'm going to take a little break, get something to drink, and we'll start part two. Please stay with me because this is so important. And there's all kinds of scholarship for you that backs up what I'm saying. So don't just rely on me. Study Nagarjuna. Study Vasubandhu. Study Buddha's original thesis on enlightenment. Study. Buddhism is about study. Unless you study, you can't retrain your mind. You can't understand deeply. With deep understanding, you can retrain your mind to go, I don't need to keep doing that. I can break that behavior. I can break that pattern. We're humans, we love pattern, but we get stuck in pattern too. And one of the patterns we get stuck in, and you know this, if you study Buddhism at all, suffering comes from attachment, desire and attachment. Desire comes from attachment. What is our greatest fundamental attachment is this body, this human life. That's why we have such a hard time trying to envision what we are without this. That's why everything wants to say, well, you get born again, or you go to a planet, or the aliens grab you, or we come up with every sort of craziness because we're so afraid to lose this. But Buddhism says you are not this. You are not this. Next, we'll talk about Einstein and E equals mc squared. Energy equals matter. Reverse it. Matter is energy. So we don't reduce to stardust. We don't reduce to anything. We are energy. Now it becomes easier to understand if we're just a ball of energy, if that's who we are. I am, not this body, but this energy that I'm right now for the moment calling Sylvain Chamberlain. When I die, that energy does go somewhere, but it's not as Sylvain Chamberlain. It's just part of all the energy with tendencies and conditions, but not me, not Sylvain Chamberlain, not destined to rebirth. Rebirth happens moment to moment. Moment to moment. That's rebirth. When we get in a car accident or a loved one dies or any kind of trauma happens in our life, that's when it becomes obvious to us. That's when everything simplifies, at least for a little while. Why does it take so much trauma for us to go, gosh, life is really so simple, it's just this. Within days, hours, sometimes months, we totally forget that. And we get all complicated and play in our attachments and our desires, and we completely fall into this human trap again. And Buddha was just trying to say, stay awake. Stay alert to that moment, because that's where the answer is. That's where no suffering is. That's where nothing can affect you. All right, it's break time. Thank you for listening. I'll be right back, I promise.